Good morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group. I'm here with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets, including metals and energy. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our monthly commodity reports, our daily metals reports, our blog, and our podcast, commodityresearchgroup.com. Thank you. And I would like to thank our friend, Doug Stetzer at EKT, Interactive Oil and Gas Training, for hosting this podcast. Doug writes a daily newsletter, puts up podcasts and learning modules, and you can check out all this stuff at EKTinteractive.com. Today is January 13th. So, Andy, I think what's on everybody's mind is OPEC compliance. Can you just give us a rundown on what you're hearing, what you're reading, what you're seeing about how that's going?
I think OPEC compliance is actually going pretty well so far. Saudis have said that they're under 10 million barrels a day, and that's starting from 10.5. And they are also saying they may even go lower in February. So that's a plus. I think Kuwait and the UAE are in line to pretty much make their cuts. But, and again, those are mostly expected, that the Persian Gulf producers would be in line on the cuts. But you know, it looks as if they have cut. There are the smaller producers that have said they're complying, but that's not so certain. I think that on the non-compliance side, Iraq, which we had always questioned on where they're going to be, has yet to start complying with their cuts. They had record exports out of the south in late December, early January, and it looks like February is going to be pretty strong from Iraq. So we're not really seeing the compliance there. And Iran is not part of this agreement. They are liquidating their storage. They've said to have sold over 13 million barrels from storage and are aggressively out marketing. But again, they're not part of the agreement. But overall, I think compliance, and I think net OPEC production, looking at those two factors. One, I think compliance is going to be overall okay, like 70% compliant. I think net OPEC production is probably going to drop from 34 million to something like 33.2 or 33.3 as Iran, Libya, and Nigeria may be able to get some extra barrels out, but so I think the cuts will be somewhere around 900,000 barrels a day,
which leads to an incentive for U.S. oil producers to increase as well. Is that going to cut into that number in terms of an overall picture?
Yeah, and we saw it in the last weekly report. Production was up by 180,000 barrels a day. Now this is as a result. I think that it's as a result of higher prices during the fourth quarter, which allowed producers to hedge into the first, second, and third quarter, and they have taken advantage of high prices to hedge. Tremendous gains in efficiencies in the Permian Basin. Some of the drilled but uncompleted wells coming back. So U.S. production is up 200 a day now. You know, if you look at OPEC production, let's say it's 33.1, 33.2, and the call on OPEC crude is somewhere around 32.8. You know, that would presuppose a surplus, but that call on OPEC crude does not include a 200,000 barrel a day increase in U.S. production. So that's a big, you know, that's a big swing.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. Speaking of the EIA report came out, I think Monday, they're showing world demand up 1.6 million barrels for 1.4 for 2016, and then up another 1.6 for 2017. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that number. Are you in line with that? Are you above it, below it?
I think it's a little. I think 1.6 is a little optimistic. I think it's going to come in closer to like one. I think it's going to come in to closer to 1.3 to 1.4. The EIA has a pretty good growth for U.S. demand. I think it was like 300 a day for 2017. I think that's going to be more like 200 a day, and certainly there's a lot of uncertainty on where Chinese demand is going to come in. So and obviously all the uncertainty on global growth, et cetera. But I think the 1.6 is way too aggressive.
Yeah, they seem to pencil in plus 300,000 for China in 2017, and they have I think this was the first month they had numbers for 2018. You know, take them for what they're worth, but they also have China up 0.3 or 300,000 barrels a day as well. It just seems like China's always a wild card, but
right,
you know,
yeah, and India had a good year, great year in 15, pretty good year in 16,
right.
Demand growth, and then we'll see if that's going to continue. And then, of course, you know, the bigger macro picture on what's the effect of a stronger dollar on global demand, particularly for emerging markets. So, I think that 1.6 is too high.
So the 70%, 75% compliance by OPEC seems to have effectively taken away the floor, or put in a floor for this market, and we're hanging out around, you know, $50-$55 for a while now. And I'm just I want to get into the prices. First of all, what do you think going forward, like short term? You think we'll stay in this range? And then also, could you comment on the risks to your price expectations? So, for example, we just talked about demand. You think the numbers are too high? Is it?
Well, at least for the EIA numbers, I think the IEAs are a little bit lower. I think that
the IEAs are a little lower. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Probably right.
So basically, what's your price outlook for the next, say, for the first quarter, say, and then what are the risks that are involved in that? Like, what could go wrong?
Well, in our monthly report, which just came out early this week, we were a little bit more, I think we were more bearish than what the market has been saying. We were looking for first quarter to actually be a little bit soft, with a potential break of $50 on WTI. Actually get, I think, 47, 48 was our low for the first quarter, and Brent maybe breaking 50 as well. And our idea on that was the fact that these cuts would, at least the non-OPEC cuts, would be a little bit slower to come about. And we saw 100 a day cut from Russia, but that was due to cold weather. Russia probably won't be complying to their part of the deal until later in the second quarter. The other big issue that just is not going away is the inventories. We still have been unable to really start seriously drawing inventories. I mean, there might have been a slight global draw in the third quarter, but I think fourth quarter was up, and the U.S. inventories just failed to draw, and you know, we still need to work through a lot of product, a lot of both crude and products, I think, to get this market on better footing. So I think in terms of prices, you know, the market spiked early in the year. You know, first trading day it spiked, and has been very optimistic about the OPEC production cuts. But I think that you know, continues to be slapped in the face with some of these inventory numbers, which were highlighted in the weekly report, which I'm sure we'll get to. Now, having said that, I think, you know, we are going to start as we move close. You know, we'll be looking into the third, as we move into the second quarter, we'll be looking into the third quarter with the potential for some sustained stock draws. And, you know, the market should be optimistic about that for a reason, because if OPEC is able to stay at these production numbers, we are going to draw stocks in the second half. And, you know, I think at that point, the market can move right back up to maybe, you know, maybe high 50s, low, even low 60s, depending on how compliance is. The big unknown there, of course, is the rollover. The next OPEC meeting is May 25th. So, you know, we'll see where OPEC and non-OPEC are.
Couple things. Let me just make a couple comments. The EIA talked about OPEC surplus, and they say it's, you know, I guess it's expected to be 1.2, something like that. Their capacity.
Right.
And then they'll always say, but high inventories offset that. So basically, on the OPEC surplus would look tight if it wasn't for the excess inventories that you just talked about.
Right. And the thing, you know, if you look at the market structure, the front months still are in pretty good contango. You know, yes. WTI is in good contango. Brent is getting a little bit tighter because they're starting to. Asian demand has picked up for 40s as a result of some of the Persian Gulf cutbacks. The fronts are still in heavy contango.
Well, I'm just going to throw Econ 101 at you, but if you have a large amount of financial buyers of futures contracts and they have no interest in taking oil, you know, they just continue to roll their length.
Right.
That basically the idea is they push demand up, they push the price up because they're, you know, they're net, let's say they're all on one side, they're net buyers. And when they go to roll, they're always pushing the front month down and buying a back month. So they're basically, yeah, we want to buy oil, but as we get close to delivery, no, we don't want it. So that action, if you push prices up artificially, you bring out more supply, you dampen demand. The difference basically has to be storage. So we may see in financial, as you know, we were used to talk about this in the 90s, how much funds and financial guys are influencing the markets, and they're, you know, they're a multiple of that now. So they're really a big influence, you know, it's hard to pin down exactly how much it's one factor, basically, and we don't know how much to weight that factor. But these guys can have an influence on that contango going forward.
Oh, no question. And it's interesting, the net length of for WTI of the money managers or the non-commercials is 6-to-1 long.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really long.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's as long as it's ever been, but 6-to-1 long is, you know, pretty yes. healthy number.
Yes. Healthy. I find it interesting that if you think that a lot of this money is computer generated signals, so trend following stuff. You know, if the market goes up, then more money comes in. If it breaks through resistance, more money comes in, that kind of thing. But when you look at the U.S. oil, the ETF, that's actually a fund that just basically buys futures contracts. It's a long only thing. The money seems to go in and out more as a value trader. You know, it's like when the oil prices come down, more money goes in, and when prices go up, more money comes out. I you know, I haven't studied it, you know, done regressions or anything like that, but it just seems to be a different kind of player in that market. But that's just an aside. Okay. Can you, Can you talk about, when we covered this already, but the again, back to the EIA monthly that came out, they're showing stock levels for 2017, you know, petroleum liquids going up 0.3 for the year. Right. And then they have it up 0.1 for 2018. Right. Well, that's too far, but are we ever going to be, they do have a draw, I think 0.1 the second half of 16, but are we ever going to
17, I think, too.
17. I haven't kicked that new year off in my head. But are we ever going to get, you know, a good draw? I mean, you know, what's your feeling on these?
Seemingly not. I mean, we just can't seem to get out of our way. And I, you know, the last we were on our way actually to drawing some inventory since July. We had drawn 55 million, and then all of a sudden, the last 2 weeks, total stocks built by 20 million, led by gasoline and distillate. So it's going to be, you know, part of it, we're going to have to start losing some of the contango. I think one of the good part of the total stock draws that we've seen have been in. You know, in terms of liquid exports, propane certainly, those exports have been strong. Gasoline has been really strong. Diesel too, and crude exports are record. So, you know, I think it's going to have to be the export market that really starts drawing the inventories down, or we start going into serious. You know, if we go into big backwardation, you know, maybe we'll get. Some inventory drawn. The market is indicating that, you know, along down to 17 or 18, crude could go backwardated.
Interesting. The Atlanta Fed GDP now has growth in the U.S. at plus 2.9%, which is a, you know, pretty good number compared to what we've been growing at. And then I think also a lot of the world PMI type stuff numbers are coming in better, so it's possible that maybe we get a little you know, bump up this year in world economic activity, which would certainly help. Yeah, and it might explain some of these brisk export markets that the U.S. is seeing right now. So,
you know, Jim, as I think you pointed out, in the monthly, they said the ethane demand is going to be very strong this year because of some of the new petrochemical plants along the Gulf Coast this year and next year. Oh, yeah. So that's going to be, you know, that'll be something to be carefully watched. But in terms of gasoline demand and diesel demand, you know, I think gasoline demand this year in the U.S. is going to be flat, maybe a little bit higher because pump prices are going to be well above last year's numbers. The fleet is fleet efficiencies. We're losing some gains on fleet efficiencies, but I think we're going to see a price effect on the on pump, given where the pump prices are going to be. So I don't see gains in gasoline and diesel. We probably will see some gains because mining and manufacturing is going to be stronger. And it's not going to be as warm as it was last winter, although January is now looking like it's going to be warmer than normal.
Right. Okay. Can we just talk about the week? There's some really interesting things coming out of the weekly, and I want you to take them maybe one by one and give me your comments on them. This is the weekly EIA report. We had record runs. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that could be just noise. A lot of these numbers, it's year end. You know, margins, it's noise, but margins were really strong in the last 2 weeks of December. So obviously refiners are reacting to the strong margins. That 17.1 is going to go down because
when When is, you know, when do they start going into turnaround?
It's going right. First of all, there've been since that report, there've already been two or three major refinery issues, and as we head into, this is the second week, so the fourth week of January and on into February, we'll you know, turnarounds, I don't think they'll be as big as last year, but that run number's going down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that'll probably be a high watermark for a long time. That's 17.1.
Right. Very good. Also, the demand for gasoline and distillates just kind of fell off the table.
That's year end. That's just
noise.
Year end noise. Yeah. Okay. That there's no way that distillate demand was like 2.9 and 3.2 the last 2 weeks. It's just no way. I mean, that's so off trend. What'll happen there is one of these weeks, diesel demand is going to end up being like over 5 million a day. You know, stocks will draw and
they'll catch up.
They'll catch up.
Okay. And then we talked about oil exports. That's just something. They're booming.
Well, they're booming, right? Mexico is taking a tremendous amount of gasoline because their refinery capacity is running at only 52%.
Wow.
So the demand for U.S. gasoline is just booming.
Right.
Mexico. There, and I know we're going to discuss this more in detail shortly, but, you know, our two biggest trading partners are Canada and Mexico.
Right.
So we'll see if there's any change to either, you know, the North American Free Trade Agreement or to the border adjustment tax. You know, there could be,
right.
You know, these flows could really,
yeah.
All hell could break loose on some of these flows.
Right. You want to build the pipeline, but then you want to tax the stuff coming through it. It'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting
going forward. And that will have an impact on the spreads. So I want to take it to the options world because I think there's some really interesting things going on that kind of complement some of the stuff we've been talking about. And first, I just want to recap quickly what happened last year. So, you know, we came into the year in February. We made the high of volatility of 79.2. That's Feb 12, and that happened to be the third highest spike of volatility of all time. So the highest was the Gulf War I. And the second highest was 2008 in December when we dropped to around $35 from $145. But the low was 27.3, and that was coming out. So that was 12.28. So the end of the year, post OPEC, we reached the low of the year. So very interesting. The other thing was we set a record volume number, 460,000 options. Traded on November 29th. And then the next day we broke the record again, 579,935. And as you know, Andy, the day one trading were November 14th, 1986. We were there.
We were there.
Around 5,000 traded. So this is a, my baby's all grown up. And again, the if you think about, put it in perspective, the long-term average was 33.2. And for the year, we averaged 42.0. So if you thought it was a volatile year, you were right. And again, we came into this year 27.3, and we're in the 30 low 30s right now.
So, which is the long term average, right?
We're right just below the long term average. So I think the EIA mentioned, EIA always does the 95% confidence interval for their price forecast, and they come up with, you know, a year out, it's something like 30 to 90, and they did it this time when it's a relatively low volatile year. So even these low vol years, low vol expectations still indicate wide price ranges as you go out. So but what I wanted to talk about is where is all the activity in the options world? And it's basically, if you look at the front month, let's say February, you see all the open interest showing up on the $50 and $55 calls and the $50 and the $45 puts. So this is, you know, we've been moving around a lot. So you can see that, I mean, we kind of have this range expected, and the $45 put buyers are probably thinking along the lines that you were saying, maybe a little weakness early on in the first quarter. And then as you go through the year, it's the $55 and $60 call and the $45 and $50 puts. So these are, you know, if you're a producer, you're probably saying, let's sell $60 calls, you know, out and buy $50 puts, $45 puts. And that's probably a range they can do some serious oil producing in, you know. It's a good coverage for them. And then if the market blows up past 60, they're selling crude at $60, but the next round of hedging, they'll get a higher price. So that $60 call makes a lot of sense for producers. So when you get to December of 2017, the open interest on the 60 call is 43,000. And that happens to be the number one option in terms of open interest. Now, the December option has been around a long time, so it's catching, you know, it's got a lot of time to accumulate that number. But oftentimes it's the front month that has the most open interest, not, you know, a deferred month like this. So, again, there's probably some call selling by producers, but the $60 call December has probably got a lot of bullish speculators buying that as well. If we look at the spread options, so this would be the first month, second month spread, the open interest going out in 2017 seems to be accumulating on the flat call, which is basically, you know, you buy that if you think you're going into backwardation. And you sell it if you say, no, we're not going into backwardation. And the minus 50 put is very active. And the, if you think about it, if you own a storage facility, it's probably getting profitable right around that minus 50 price. And if you collect the premium, it's a nice hedge for your storage facility. So often we see owners of storage selling that put as a hedge. So so there's nothing strange there. I'd say the craziest thing that we've seen, as you and I have talked about, are these Brent TI options, the Brent TI spread options. We're seeing a huge amount of open interest accumulate on three strikes. And in December 2018, the flat call has 48,800 open interest. And the plus $2 call has 13,000 open interest. And in June 18, the flat call has almost 14,000. Now, compare that to, if you take every other Brent TI option, the highest open interest is around 3,000. So this is a huge amount of open interest on these options.
Jim,
and maybe you could.
Yep. Could I just interrupt you for one second? Because some of our listeners may not know what that spread option really means. Like, what is the flat call or what is
the yes. So,
call? So if you could explain to them, you know, what that is.
Yes. A flat call would be, it would mean that Brent is at the same price as WTI. So if I bought the call, it's just like any other call, but that position would make money if WTI increased its value over Brent. So if I took the price of WTI, subtract Brent, it's a positive number. So let's say it goes a dollar over, that flat call would be worth a dollar at expiration. Okay, so when I say there's 48,000 contracts on that, that means somebody's been buying those, and it's settled at a price of $1.61. They probably bought them cheaper than that.
Well, I think they started buying them when they were like 20 cents.
20, yeah. 40 yeah. Cents. In fact, yesterday's activity on this was, I think there was about 4,000 lots on these three options, and open interest went down. So you could see there's some profit taking going on, I assume. But why don't you, I mean, we've talked about this. Why don't you talk about what you think the buyer of this is trying to get out of this trade?
The I think the impetus for this trade is on a change in tax regime, specifically a border adjustment tax, whereby imports of crude would be taxed by a certain percentage, while U.S. exports would not be taxed, which would presuppose, if you did the all the modeling and many of the investment bankers have put out reports on the modeling, but it would suppose that TI would trade at a significant premium based on whatever the, you know, if you just wanted to model it on what the tax is, with some some reports saying it could be as high as $5, $6, $7 over. So buyer of this is obviously either trying to hedge it, a big exposure, or just taking a speculative view based on the tax. Of course, you know, there's a long way to go between now and when this would be enacted, but and there are many factors to a Brent TI besides just what taxes would be, but you know, it could be a significant change, as could any change in NAFTA. So, that's the driving force, I think, behind this trade. And then once the trade was done in big size, so everybody's talked about it, analyzed it, studied it, and it so often happens in markets. You know, it's now become the trade du jour, as Jim just mentioned, given all the open interest that's built on these trades. Also, the underlying the December 18 Brent TI has rallied from WTI minus $2. When they first started putting this trade on, TI was $2 under Brent. So they had $2 to go just on the underlying to get to flat. But now it's flat, you know, so the underlying, it has worked.
That's a big problem for people who, like, if you're a market maker, you sold those options. What you do is you delta hedge it, and you know, to so illiquid to delta hedge something like that that's just moved, it's very difficult. And I hope the seller has you hope it's some sort of I don't know, somebody with deep pockets that they can run. I don't know. It's a very, very difficult thing to manage the risk. I mean, we've seen this with the when you think about the calls that get sold on the March, April natural gas a few years ago, where we had a cold snap they're just still, when you're trying to get out or you're trying to cover it with the underlying futures, it's just impossible. So with that kind of open interest, we expect this thing to be focused on a lot, and I'm sure the oil guys are all experts on tax policy and macro implications for what it does to the dollar and all that kind of stuff now.
They are now. I think one of the main things that this trade has brought to main focus is the border adjustment tax.
Right.
Or not, you know, that's going to get passed. The oil industry, I'm sure, will be lobbying one way or the other.
Both ways. If you're integrated, it'll be interesting to watch. And then there's also the, if any pipelines get built, we've got that. If say something like the Keystone Pipeline gets built, it's more oil into Cushing, and it's just, how would you trade a Brent? I mean, a a spread option out in 2018 based on a pipeline into the from Canada into the U.S. being built. I think it would be hard to take either side of that. You know,
yeah.
So much. That's why I'm just surprised at the size. However, if they're taking profits now, they did enough size to there's enough uncertainty in this thing to get that Brent TI, you know, moving up and you know then the person who's short all those calls has to buy even more to cover it. It creates its own dynamic. So anyway, anything else you want to add to today's? So we covered. There's a lot of moving parts. You know, it's just it's what we love about the oil markets. There's always something going on. But is there anything we want to cover that we may have missed? Or
I think we covered a lot today, and I think we've, you know, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty in 2017. So it should be a pretty good trading year, I think. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities. But you know, we certainly don't have anywhere near the information that we need right now. And that's probably a good, you know, that'll be good for markets.
Right. I mean, that's the speculator's advantage is if you don't like the market, you don't have to put a position on. But when you're hedging or, you know, when you're in this stuff on a daily basis, you know, by not doing something, you have been given a position just by the nature of the business you're in. So,
right.
You know, so it's a really, you know, hats off to these hedgers that have to make decisions on a daily basis and in a market that seems very where there's so many factors. But that's why we are drawn to this stuff. Okay, this is Jim Colburn and Andy LeBeau, CommodityResearchGroup.com. Check us out on our website. And also, again, I'd like to thank Doug Stetzer. EKT, Interactive Oil and Gas Training. And you can check out Doug and what he's doing over at EKTinteractive.com. Thank you very much.